Coming to you live from the basement of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up because we're going live.
Live.
On the Fight Mixer Show.
What's up to all my brothers in different area codes, baby? Welcome to Fight Mixer, y'all.
How's New York?
How you doing, guys?
I'm good.
Doing okay. Florida. How's Florida?
South Florida, it's getting hot, man. And I have a feeling that this hurricane season is going to be no joke. Just keeping it real, we're in stage 18 of the Jumanji game that is 2020.
Holy shit. Yo, 2020 is the fucking worst year. Yo, 2020 proves that it's never too early to have your first Vietnam flashbacks. We're all going to die. Congratulations on surviving, everybody that's watching. Seriously.
Yes, congratulations to everyone. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope everybody's staying corona-free and safe and happy, but living their life.
Coronavirus, y'all. And Justin's had a busy week. You've been filming fucking everything, and you've been at the BKFC press conference where with Paige and Anthony Rumble Johnson and that big fucking fight that happened in the parking lot. Like, what the hell happened? What trouble did you get yourself into, man?
I'll still say I don't know what happened. Shannon Briggs, let's go, champ, was saying, I don't know what happened. It was insane, man. That fight, Palomino and Jim Ehlers, is heating up. It's really turning into like the Battle of Florida, which, as you know, is the hottest state in combat sports.
Jikijia.
No. I'm talking about not the fight that everybody saw for like publicity. I'm talking about the fight that happened in the parking lot. What the hell happened?
Oh, I can't talk about that.
Come on, man. Come on.
Listen, there was no fight in the parking lot. Let's just say that everybody didn't just stop talking shit whenever all the cameras were on, okay? There's a lot of unseen things that happen in this game. As you know, you're a fighter yourself, sir. Matt, you know this as well. When you're out, that's one of the things about being at a live MMA event that I can't wait to come back when this Jumanji shit's over, is people going to live MMA, you have a different experience, or boxing, or bare knuckle, than watching it on TV. So you see things that you don't see.
Just give me a hint. Like, what the fuck happened? Like, come on, just give me like something. Give me like a snippet.
He wants to keep his job. That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I know both of those guys, and I respect both of them.
Just like prom. Just give me just a tip, baby. Like, what the hell happened? Like, did they really, like...
I'll tell you this. I've got friends that are really close to Palomino, and I've got friends that are really close to Jim Ehlers. And let's just say that they're both beyond a boiling point. And both sides told each of my friends that guy doesn't want any piece of me. So you got two trains about to collide. And I hope that it happens in BKFC and that they don't run into each other in like a parking lot somewhere in South Florida, because that parking lot's going to have problems.
That'd be bad fucking business.
Go back and watch the video. It took Rumble Johnson and Shannon, let's go champ, Briggs, and like that's 20 other people to hold those guys back at the press conference.
Shannon Briggs, that's another fucking legend. I hope he climbs in the ring. We have Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. I want Shannon Briggs to come back.
Shannon Briggs is signed with BKFC. He's fighting in BKFC.
Yeah, yeah.
No fucking way.
Oh, yeah. That's why I want to get him on here.
But Shannon the Cannon Briggs, dude. Can you imagine what's going to happen when that guy connects with no glove?
Shoot. You're fucking kidding me. He's actually committed?
Yeah, he committed. And that's why he's putting himself out there more. He's always had a good, you know, way of keeping his name in the game when he's not fighting. So him walking into ATT the other day made sense. And I'm glad he was there, because my anemic ass was running around in the back scared, if you noticed the video, holding my cell phone like, please don't kill the civilian. I wasn't going to hold either one of those guys back, so I'm glad that he was there.
you know what? Despite the, like, the pandemic, like, MMA is starting to heat up again. You got Titan FC, which at the end of the month is going to be a crazy ass show. You were you were filming like promos for Titan FC. Like, that's going to be a stat card right there. You got BKFC that's going down. You also, you had UFC that happened this past weekend, which, you know, Daniel Cormier's retirement fight didn't go the way I suspected. And by the way, we also have Mark Hunt coming on, so hang tight, everybody. But what did you think about this weekend's UFC card? Like, what were your opinions on it?
You know, it was historic. I found myself watching that main event with those two guys. They're such good ambassadors for the sport outside of the cage that you don't want to see either one of them lose. So yeah. It was one of those conflicted – you're probably used to this as a fighter. You know, when you watch two friends fight each other, we had a tight main event a couple months ago between Raymond Ramos, godson, and Danny Sabatello. And I'm friends with both those guys. Watching right. the fight was like, it was hard. So I had a similar feeling, but I enjoyed it, man. It was historic, you know, and we have Frankie Edgar and Pedro Munhoz this weekend. So yeah. The UFC train's rolling.
Right. And I had Daniel Cormier on my podcast. Daniel Cormier is a great guy. And, you know, I'm glad he's able to ride off in the sunset and enjoy the fruits of his labor. I wish he exited on a W. But, of course, you know, MMA, shit happens. It was a great fight, five-round fight. It was historic. You know, one of the best heavyweight fights I've ever seen in my entire life. Sure, Shane O'Malley fucking gets stopped. That made my fucking night, though. That was my favorite thing on the planet.
I like Sugar Shane O'Malley, man. You know, I think, you know, Cody Garbrandt coming out and shooting shots at him saying, you know, you're not built for war. Like, you know, all this stuff. I think it's kicking a man while he's down. I'll be honest with you. I think that us talking about Sugar Shane O'Malley already first is part of the problem. We should be talking about Marlon Vera.
Yeah.
You know, a lot's taken away from Marlon Vera because of Sean O'Malley's train derailing. But this is the summer for train derailments, bro.
Oh yeah, and we're gonna have Colin Oyama, the coach of Vera, on this show the 27th. But I imagine like the board meeting in WMG the very next day, like, oh, we invested all this money in the marketing of Sugar Shane O'Malley. I imagine somebody in that board meeting just fucking putting a shotgun in their mouth and just fucking blowing their brains out because, yo, that was crazy. That was crazy, especially in the first round. GameStop, shit. Like,
yeah. Let me ask you a question as a fighter. You've actually been in there. You will always have this crazy experience that I'll never, thank God, know what it's like. When he landed that elbow, and when Marlon Vera hit him with that elbow at the end, and he kind of froze up for a second. My wife and I are still like debating. She's a huge Sugar Shane fan. If he was out or not. Was he out in your mind?
I don't think he was out. I think whether you get hit with elbows, fists, knees, kicks, anything, it all sucks equally. So obviously, like, you're a little bit shell-shocked after you get, like, a clean hit. Like, every punch hurts. Every punch hurts. I don't care what anybody says. Even though adrenaline's running and pumping through your veins, everything sucks, no matter what. And I think it just takes some time to getting doing the adjustments and, you know, the shot happens. You're shocked by the shot because it actually landed. And it's just getting over that initial shock. I don't think he was actually knocked out or floored or anything like that. It just takes a little bit to process you getting hit like that and getting hit flush, you know?
But see, I think – thank you for that insight. And I'm sure it all sucks. It all looks like it sucks. Which, by the way, Matt, great entrance, by the way. You should always walk in when we say everything sucks. So like, we need like a little trumpet. Like, everything sucks. And then you come in.
nice.
I think it would work. But I think his delay, you know, Marlon Vera landed that elbow on the ground and he like froze. I think his delay right there is why the ref stopped it. So was that him going, everything sucks? Or was it him going, I'm just going to, you know, take a moment here and cover up, but I wasn't really out of it. I'm just wondering what you think of that.
I don't think he was knocked out. I do not think Sugar Shane O'Malley was knocked out. I think the initial hit, because it landed flush and it landed clean, was the thing that
beautiful.
And I've been elbowed on the ground before, and I was just like, oh, that fucking sucked. And he did it again, and then I got punched in the body. I'm like, oh, three of those sucked. And then I started reacting, and that's when I started actually grappling with him and like trying to make my escape when I was when somebody was in my guard. You know, I don't think he was knocked out. I think he was hurt. I think the referee saw that he was hurt. And especially, like, look at the entire fight. Once Vera lands that kick and then he switches and he, you know, he goes down to one knee, I just think the referee knew he was hurt. One way or another, he was hurt. And you could just, you saw the grimace on his face. He was hurt. No matter two ways about it, whether he was knocked out or not, he was still hurt. The fight should have been stopped because, you know, bad things could have happened. So, like, good call on the referee, no matter what.
Well said, sir. Listen, the world knew that guy was hurt. The old man in the back row with the little mini telescope from 1890, whatever, he knew that he was hurt. You know what I mean? But I don't know. Let me ask you this follow-up question about that specific fight.
Sure.
How much of it was him not placing his footing correctly or slipping on the canvas? And how much is attested to Marlon Vera with that nasty calf kick or him, you know, checking kicks? How much of that percentage, that pie, do we give to Marlon Vera?
Right. And Debbie, I love you, by the way. So just shooting that out there. And Debbie, yeah, thank you for watching. So I think the kid, I don't think it's necessarily an issue with skill. I don't think it's necessarily an issue with how great of a fighter he is. I think that it comes down to attitude. Attitude determines your latitude. I think he came to this fight with a piss poor attitude. I think he experienced a little bit of a setback in the middle of the fight, because if you saw it, the fight when he won and he got injured and he still completed the fight, I think he got hurt. He hurt his ankle or foot or whatever, because they did x-rays and they couldn't find anything wrong with him. I think he got hurt, and then you still have two more rounds to go. You have a full court first round, second round, and third round to go. I think in his mind, he said, oh, fuck, I'm hurt this early in the game, this early in the fight. I just saw the confidence melt away as he switched up his stances, because he was doing that throughout the fight. He was doing that throughout the fight. I just saw the confidence completely melt away, and that swagger he carried on throughout his entire career, throughout the promos and everything, talking shit about Vera. I think Vera had the great strategy. Dr. Colin Oyama had the prescription to get rid of Sean O'Malley. It was a beautifully placed kick. He hit him with that kick, hit him again with that kick. Sugar Shane O'Malley was hurt. I think Sugar completely gave up. I think he completely mentally checked out as soon as he got hurt. So I don't think it was necessarily, you know, him getting knocked out. I think it was him just giving up, period. You know what I'm saying?
So you're saying that he broke him. You're saying that he broke him.
I think he gave up. He didn't break him
before he beat him physically.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with anything you said except one thing, switching the stances. He does that all the time. I think it was more to do with him blowing through everybody and then running into a real guy.
Right. But look at all of his post-fight promos. He's been saying, oh, I lost to a mediocre fighter. I lost to a journeyman and blah, blah, blah. I lost to a fighter that is not better than me. I lost to an inferior fighter. He has a piss poor attitude. He carries on that same Conor McGregor type bullshit, except with the exception, Conor McGregor is absolutely a gentleman in defeat. I think Sugar Shane O'Malley is a young guy in the sport, and he has a piss poor fucking attitude. It comes down to attitude. If he faces adversity throughout his career, he's not going to be able to press on like Conor McGregor did in Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor 2. You saw the grit and determination in Conor McGregor when he fought through that fight. You also saw the grit and determination when he fought against Chad Mendes and he had to grind out a victory through adversity. I think Sugar Shane O'Malley is a young guy who's never been tested. And as soon as he saw that one test of an injury so early in the fight, he mentally checked out. I just think he was hurt. Referee saw he was hurt. He made it perfectly apparent that he was fucking hurt to the referee, and that's why they stopped the fight. I think Sugar Shane O'Malley has a piss poor attitude, and it's because he's a young man who never experienced adversity yet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And I knew that he was in trouble in the pre-fight promo when he compared himself to Michael Jordan. I was like, bro, you just said Jordan, man? Oh, man.
You fucking did that?
You didn't see that?
No, I
want to be like, he said a few names. I want to be like Jordan. He didn't even say I want to be like. It was more than that. It was like, I am. And I'm all about believing in yourself and self-affirmation, and especially in the fight game, that's huge for you guys. You have to believe in yourself. But, yeah. But you know, ego stands for easing God out, you know? And he pushed God out of that in that sentence, and it all became about him. And I was worried about him in that moment. I said, man, I film fight promos. So I can imagine on set, if I was on set, I would have been behind the camera like.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But here's the thing, though. As a fighter, you're not looking to be better than your opponent. I mean, at least in my perspective. And again, I could be wrong. Every fighter is different. I don't want to be better than my opponent. I want to be the best me on my worst day. Obviously, my opponent is going to put me through shit and put me through hell. So I want to be the best me. And if the best me comes out victorious, great. If not, you know, I lick my wounds. I learn more. And then I go out and I fight another day. I think Sugar Shane O'Malley saw his worst day. And he didn't really want to comply and really didn't want to pound through it. You know, I just think you saw the promos and you saw him sitting in the king's chair with that robe on, that ridiculous fucking robe. And I just saw a young guy who is going to be tested. And I didn't know when the ass whooping was going to come. Maybe Barry was going to deliver the ass whooping or the come to Jesus meeting or come to Kyle Oyama meeting. Or I didn't know when the come to Jesus meeting was going to happen. But I knew it was going to happen. And Vera absolutely put him through shit and was going to give him his worst day. And Sean O'Malley was not going to comply with that shit. When you're told how great you are, when you have WMG, a publicly traded company, investing so much money in your marketing, investing so much money in your character and your persona, and telling you, oh, here's millions, kid, we're going to make you a fucking star. You stop becoming a fighter, and you want to be a star because you now believe that you're a fucking star. You now believe you're above everybody. And when you think that you're above everybody, when somebody that you think is below you starts whooping that ass, you're going to check out, and you're going to, you know, that's going to really test you, whether, you know, you believe the fucking hype, the hype that was given to you or not. And Sean O'Malley did not believe that fucking hype, baby. He did not believe that hype. He did not check in when the stakes were down. George St. Pierre, UFC 100, fucking pulled his grind. He sat in his corner, and he said, dude, I fucking pulled my grind. I'm fucked up right now. And the corner said, this is where champions are made, baby. And George St. Pierre checked right in and finished those two rounds with takedowns. And he finished that fight with a decision and kept his title.
And your boy McGregor did the same thing in the Max Holloway fight.
Yeah.
He got a serious victory. I agree with you about Sean O'Malley, man. And to sum up everything you said in one sentence, it was Sean O'Malley was saying, I want to be anywhere in the world except in here.
Right.
Let's move on past Sugar Shane. Let's go to Titan FC 63, which is August 8th, a week from this Friday. This is going to be the best Titan FC of the COVID era. Mark my words.
Yo, let them know, baby. Say it louder for the bitches in the back. What's the main event?
If you have a fight pass, you should, a long time ago, have had it. But you can do a 7-day free trial.
True. Very true.
Like that. But we've got Muhammad Usman in the main event. You heard that right, Usman, as in Kamaru Usman's brother. He looks just like him, except 100 pounds of muscle added to him. He's a scary, scary dude. If you don't know, look him up. Then we've got a co-main event that's a title fight. Flyweight, vacant title. Christian Yan Estralia versus Oscar Cruz from the Dominican Republic. Dominican Republic's best flyweight against our best flyweight. America versus Dominican Republic. And the two guys that held that belt before, whoever wins that fight, were Juan Puerta and Jose Shorty Torres. So that Titan belt specifically in the flyweight division is known on paper to catapult fighters to the next level. It's an important fight. And then you've got killers on it like Roman Feraldo, Gus Villamil. Then you got goat shed guys coming in like Ryan Koos, Ryan the Third Street motherfucking Savage Koos. It's a scary card, man, and it's going to be an exciting one. So tune in August 28th.
And you're the man behind the scenes. I mean, you're the cameraman. You're the one that makes this production happen and takes the great stuff that's happening in the cage and bring it to life and put it on UFC Fight Pass. Like, and from your perspective, what do you think about Baby Usman? I mean, he looks like a fucking killer. Like, what do you think about him?
First of all, I want to correct you on a couple of things. I'm just a tiny piece, man, and I'm beyond grateful to be that tiny piece. I've never in my life been more happy to be a part of something. And I've never in my life been more proud to say I'm a little piece of something. So, yeah, I do help with the production stuff. It's awesome. But Baby Usman, The Motor. That's his nickname, The Motor, because he was a Miami Hurricane football player, and he got that nickname there.
No shit.
Because he has that. He's like that. I don't know if you watch, you know, if you know old football, but there was another Motor back in the day, Greg the Motor Lloyd, Greg Lloyd, the old Pittsburgh Steeler linebacker in the 90s. He had that nickname too, because the guy never got tired. So he has that nickname, and he's a huge dude. I don't get intimidated by a lot of fighters, to be honest. I work with a lot of fighters. There's a few guys, though, I'd say maybe like one out of 10 guys where I'm with them and I'm like, and they'll be looking at me just having a normal conversation, and they'll say something simple like, you know, can I have that water right there? And I'll pee my pants a little bit just by them asking me something simple. And he's one of those 10, man. Super nice guy. I would not wish my worst enemy having to fight that guy.
And the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I mean, like, Kamaru Usman, like, his brother is a fucking savage. I mean, I saw him. He caught my radar when he was training with the Black Zillions. And if you don't know about the Black Zillions, it was an old gym. It was like an offset, or maybe like all these disgruntled guys all started this gym. It was all African American fighters and Brazilian fighters. Started this big gym.
Yep, it was Henry Hoof's gym, and it became the Black Zillions. Now, to catch you up on the evolution of how that's evolved from that, now there's Deerfield Beach Fight Sports, which is called the Brozillions. The Brozillions is Jay-Z Cavazzante's gym. You got guys like Herbert Burns in there. You got a lot of Titan guys in there. You got Yuri Villafort and the Burns brothers train there. And then Sanford MMA is Henry Hoop's new thing. So yeah, there was Hard Knocks 365, which is now kind of Sanford. Then you've got the Brozillions. You know, it kind of broke off into a bunch of different tracks. South Florida is just kind of this crazy little, like, gremlin pool of MMA. It's nuts.
Yeah, well, you guys got American Top Team right there, and you have a bunch of American Top Teams. Like, it's pretty much the one of the biggest fight capitals of the world. I mean, it's Florida. And you have all these Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belts, all these prominent fighters. And isn't it – and I just see it from Titans. It's in Titans' best interest for Usman to win this fight. Would you say that from a marketing standpoint?
I mean, of course, man. Of course. You know, I think that just as important as it is for Usman to win for Titan, it's just as important for Usman to win for Usman, because this is the biggest – this is his first main event as far as I know. And it's a main event on UFC Fight Pass for the number one farming league for UFC. I mean, right. Titan FC has sent over 100 guys to UFC in the last 3 years. That's crazy numbers. If you win main events in Titan, you're going to get the call. If you win a belt in Titan, you're going to get the call. So they're setting him up for success, for sure. You know, whatever you believe, the universe, God, what have you, has laid out all the things for him to be successful.
Yeah. And it's pretty much, and just to get people at home what Titan FC is, it's the equivalent to, if you live in New Jersey and New York, Ring of Combat. Louis Neglia is a old school fighter who's, you know, respected throughout the fight game. And Ring of Combat has sent over a plethora of fucking talent to UFC and Bellator. So Ring of Combat, the equivalent from New York and New Jersey is Titan FC in Florida. But Titan FC has been around since, what, 2003? They produce so much fucking talent. No, 2006. I'm so sorry. 2006. And the talent that's on there is unfucking paralleled. And you have, like, American Top Team is one of the best schools and one of the best teams ever in mixed martial arts history. And just to give you an idea, when UFC was up for sale, the owner of American Top Team wanted to fucking buy the UFC, which is crazy. That's how.
No!
Mark Hunt!
Yo!
What's going on, brother?
How you doing? Doing good.
So we have Super Samoan and Mark Hunt. How you doing, brother?
Good. Sorry, I'm a bit late.
That's okay. So what have you been up to? I mean, what's been going on? I know the pandemic has been a real crazy time. What have you been up to? You know, catch us up, get us up to speed. You know, we haven't seen you since 2018, so what have you been up to, man?
Just use training and try not to get sick.
I got you, man. So you say you're still in training. Are you preparing to fight again? Or are you preparing to get back into the ring? What's the game plan for you?
Yeah, just looking forward to finishing my career. 6 more fights, and that's it.
So, you know, I know there's currently a beef between you and the UFC, and we don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but where do you plan on finishing your career? Like, where do you plan on doing these 6 fights?
Well, I'm going to do a couple of boxing fights here at home. So, you know, I'm looking forward to ending the career. It was kind of sour of itself, working for the UFC, and that's it. So, that nearly been 3 years now, so it's good.
Yeah, man. I'd love to see you back in kickboxing. I mean, I grew up watching you, so of course I'm a huge fan. I saw your battles with like Ray Sefo and Jerome LeBanner, Ernesto Hoos. I mean, the who's who of K1 before you went over to Pride and you fought Vanderlei Silva. You did the atomic butt drop. And you gave Vanderlei Silva, who was on a fucking tear, you gave him his very first loss. I mean, would you go back to kickboxing?
No, I don't think so. I've already done kickboxing. So, no, I'll probably just do some boxing and probably end up doing MMA.
Yeah, Mark, what would be the perfect scenario to ride off into the sunset? Like, what would be your dream scenario right now?
You said a couple of times. I can't hear you. Can't hear you.
What would be the perfect scenario for you, Mark, at the end of your career? What would be the perfect riding off into the sunset for you?
Whatever that guy said, I couldn't hear him.
You having trouble hearing, Mark?
I can hear you, yeah.
Ask him.
Okay, so what would be the perfect scenario for you to ride off in the sunset? You know, perfect opponent, perfect place. What would be the perfect scenario?
I'm just happy to be back. I've got my passion back for fighting, and wanted to finish my career happy on how it should have been finished. You know, so looking forward to that.
Yeah, and you're an absolute fucking legend. I mean, you fought the who's who in K1, Pride, UFC, everywhere. You fought everywhere. So, and going back on the original thing that we brought up, what's going on with the entire thing with the UFC? I know we talked about the lawsuit a bunch of times, but where are you at with that? Are they planning on settling? Are they planning on like making things good again? Because you know, everybody would love to have you. I mean,
planning to make things good again. They've never made things good. All they've been doing is just ripping people off for 20 years. So we're actually ripping the fighters off for 20 years.
Yeah.
So when you say making things good, they haven't done nothing good. Just taking from people, the fighters, and taking from them. So, yeah, hopefully October that ends, and the other lawsuit, I think it's about to be heard in September. So, I think everything's coming to a close. It's kind of crazy times, to be honest, but looking forward to these ending, and hopefully go to trial with my court case.
Absolutely. And we talked about the last episode, and I'm a big advocate for the Muhammad Ali Act. I think it needs to happen. I think it needs to be put in place. I actually talked about this in the last episode, where they need to put something to protect fighters. It's all about the fighters. This is what makes the sport work. People like you have carried the sport on their backs for years to build the sport up to where it is today. Do you think the Muhammad Ali Act would be enacted? What's the status on that?
I think that's being heard in September 10th, I think it was. But yeah, it's it needs to be implemented in MMA for sure. I mean, the fighters are getting taken advantage of, and they've been getting taken advantage for a long, long time. I mean, even some of the old fighters that got injured in working for the UFC, you know, some of them had to go fund their injuries even now. So it's a shame. And, you know, people are starting to realize that the UFC is just taking advantage of fighters. And when people ask me about, oh, did you watch this fight, that fighter goes, no, what for? I mean, the only winners out of that fight is the UFC. They're just ripping every fighter off.
I got you.
They're not interested in not interested in watching anything like that.
I got you, brother. And Justin, you want to try talking to Mark Hunt, see if he can hear you? All right, never mind. So, anywho, so one more question that we actually had, because I can rattle off a bunch of names, but what has been your favorite fight so far in your mixed martial arts and kickboxing career?
Well, the whole thing hasn't been, to me, it's been dampened by everything that's been going on. That's why I got a bit sour with it. But to me, it's just, I think it's just a joke. There's no point in trying to fight to be the best at getting the top end of that sport, because all you get is just crooked company ripping you off, promoting steroids and cheaters. So, you know, there's you lose passion and interest for working for such a rip-off company.
Absolutely. Justin, want to try talking again? Justin, join us again.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I lost you guys for a second. My apologies. Mark, can you hear me? I don't know if he can hear me. Mark, can you hear me yet?
Mark is traveling right now. Obviously, he can't. He's having trouble hearing Justin. So, one of our questions, any thoughts on doing BKFC? Would you ever do bare knuckle fighting?
Well, I talked to some guy who was offering a great contract, but you know, when I asked him to actually send the contract, he apparently a junkie or something, so never came to fruition that bare knuckle fight or that contract. So I wasn't talked to them until I was told he never paid some of his other fighters. So, you know,
I got you. So obviously there's a lot of grievances with the sport, and you're allowed to have grievances because you're an absolute legend. If you were running the sport, like besides fighters pay, Muhammad Ali Act, what do you feel, especially during the times of a pandemic, what would you do if you were running a mixed martial arts show? Like, what would you do to change the game?
Say again?
If you were running mixed martial arts, because Ray Seppo, an opponent of yours, actually runs PFL. He does a great job. He does right by everybody in the sport. If you were running your own promotion, how would you run it? Because obviously there's a lot of grievances. Obviously you would do a great job. How would you run mixed martial arts, especially during this time?
Well, it'll be fair, to be honest. The Ali Act will be in the promotion for sure. There'll be clauses in the contract for cheaters and steroid users for sure, and you know, that don't make a sense. And that's basically it. I mean, you get caught the first time for steroid users, you know, it's a 5-year ban. And then the next time you get caught, you're banned for life. You know, they'll get not 20% of what they're getting now, pay, they'll get 50%. But, I mean, why shouldn't the MMA fighters get the same as boxers? I mean, everyone's watching the mixed martial arts fighters. So why can't guys like Jones or any of those champions make $50, $60, $70 million?
Right.
Per fight. So, I mean,
and I agree. And I think because WMG, when they bought UFC, and they had Brock Lesnar, you know, Brock Lesnar, they fast-tracked him. And he ended up pissing hot right after he fought you. So it's fucking crazy how they're putting money over, you know, doing what's right by the fighters and not going by what is supposed to happen, where you are in a drug testing pool, you're constantly testing. But I think, Mark, if you agree with me, please say something, but I think that they're putting profits and they're putting money and they're putting, you know, selling pay-per-views over the safety of the fighters, because people could be seriously hurt when you're fighting guys that are juice of the fucking gills, you know?
Yeah, they've done it for many, many years, and just look at their track record. You know, I think they're all in cahoots together, and just look at their track record of how they do things. You know, hopefully this lawsuit doesn't, you know, fixes them up and teaches them a lesson. But, you know, they got a lot of money, these guys, and they got a lot of money by ripping all these fighters off.
Did you ever experience those issues when you fought in Japan? Like, did you experience, any type of issues when you fought Japan K-1 and Pride? Because a lot of fighters said that there were problems with steroids. Did you ever deal with those issues when you fought in Japan for Pride and K-1?
Well, I, like I said, when I first went in there, I questioned it a little bit. But the thing is, these people didn't say that they are the best testing policies in the world. They didn't say they had Jeff Nowinski, they caught Lance Armstrong. They said, you know, do you want to fight? They didn't say to the whole world, we've got the best testing policies in the world. And, you know, that's what UFC said. They've got the best testing policies in the world. They've got the best of everything, but yet they don't enforce their policies. They actually go the opposite way. I don't even think they'll punish the guys that have been cheating like Brock Lesnar. They're all working together in cahoots. So hopefully we can get to some discovery in my court case and drag these fuckers out of their ears.
Fuck yeah. Absolutely. So would you consider like fighting for like maybe ONE FC or maybe Ryzen? Would those be two avenues to go down?
Well, like I said, I'm just got the passion back since those fuckers stole it. I just got it back and looking forward to competing here at home and finishing my career, you know. The COVID's put a stop into everything, to be honest, but see how this fight goes and works out from there, and then hopefully I can finish my career by next year.
And do you have a date for your next fight, or do you have anything in place or any contract signed where we can actually watch you fight? Because obviously it's been a while. Is there a date in place?
It'll be end of October, I think. But because of the COVID, everything changes around. This fight was supposed to happen a while ago, but hopefully end of October.
Gotcha.
You've got BKC people on here right now asking you about you. Mark, they're asking you to come over to BKFC.
Yeah, a lot of people want to see you in BKFC. and they're talking about Shannon Briggs fighting there. And, you know, it seems like you would be perfect. I mean, that you're known for that walk-away knockout. I mean, that would be great for you to come over, do those bare-knuckle fights, and slam some guys, smash some guys.
Well, like I said before, I did talk to some guy about a contract, and when I asked him to email the contract, he was full of bullshit. And really? I heard some sources from some other people. He said he was a fucking junkie. And I'm like, wow. Didn't pay his other fighters. So, you know, it wasn't my fault. It didn't come anywhere. It was, blame it on that guy. I forgot his name. Some fucking guy.
Not David Feldman. That's not, it can't be him. It's got to be. I mean, I don't know.
It would be David Feldman, right? Like the gentleman that runs BKFC, because they just signed people.
I think it was that guy.
No way. Wow.
Yeah, I think it was that guy. In the email, I think it was him.
Holy shit. Unbelievable. We had no idea. I had no idea, obviously. And there's so many screwy things that happen that happens in the fight business. I mean, you know, we don't see it, like, you know, from the outside looking in, but obviously you know it because you've been in the sport for so long. We had no idea. And especially, we even know that a contract was actually sent to you.
Well, I don't know if it's that guy. My email says it, if it was him or not, but I'm pretty sure it was that guy.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah, because BKFC, they already have some guys that Mark has beaten. Yeah. Bigfoot, Gonzaga, Vanderlei Silva.
Like I said, I'm not 100%, but if I check my emails and messages, it's I think that was the name, because that's the only name I remember from that bare knuckle boxing.
Because BKFC is the number one in that niche of combat sports. But they're, as far as my experience with all of them has been amazing. I've only heard great things from fighters and production people.
Yeah. So, like, back to my original question, because as a fan of yours, my favorite fight with you was against Vanderlei Silva. I ordered that pay-per-view, I saw you in Japan, and you gave Vanderlei Silva his first big loss. What would you say is your favorite fight throughout your entire career, or your favorite opponent? Who's your favorite opponent?
Oh, my favorite fight right now, and my favorite opponent is the UFC. My favorite fight I'm going to fight now is the UFC. So Hopefully we can fix, I can fix these motherfuckers up. Ha! Crooked ass company. Yeah. Running these shows.
Hey, especially
it all makes me laugh is that everyone thinks these fights are fucking cool. Man, fuck the fights. They're just ripping fighters off. Huh. Ain't none of these fighters getting a hit. Ain't none of them getting a hit.
Yeah, man. And my biggest concern, too, during a time of pandemic is that revenue stream. Because now it's all streaming on ESPN. Like, when you fought, it was all about DirecTV. That's where you order the fights. Or on pay-per-view, so you got to cut the pay-per-view revenue. But now everything's on streaming. Everything's streaming. There's no audience whatsoever. Do you think MMA is going to be able to sustain itself with no crowds whatsoever?
Oh, people are still going to tune in, for sure. I mean, pay for the stream, of course they would. I mean, it's like I said, the fighters are just going to be fucked, same as always, as the last 20 years. They're just going to get pumped, and all the ex-fighters are just going to have the same, getting injured and having to pay for it themselves, or GoFund it to pay for them themselves. And that's the things that are working for this crooked company. So, you know, those that said, I've just signed a UFC, man, who gives a fuck? Fuck, the company sucks. They're just crooks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not saying it from outside. I've been in the company. Okay, I've been in the company for a long time. And I was squabbling with them 6-7 years ago about higher pay.
Right. And if you knew what you knew now, because obviously you signed the contract, you came to the UFC, once the Japanese MMA scene dwindled down, you had Dream, and then you had Ryzen. If you know what you knew now, because now American audiences across, everybody knows you. You know, you're a household name when it comes to mixed martial arts. If you're a mixed martial arts fan, they know Mark Hunt. If you knew what you know now, would you have stayed in Japan? Would you have signed that contract with the UFC? Or do you think that business dwindled down when the sale happened? Or has business always been shaky since the beginning you signed your contract?
That's a long story with that. And, you know, Dana's always a fucking liar anyway. So, regardless how I ended up there, the bottom line is, I mean, it didn't work out with that, with the MMA. I mean, if I knew what I knew now, I would have done something else. I mean, it's like before I knew anything about being part of, I thought it was really good to be part of an elite group of fighters in the UFC, and I was kind of proud to be a part of it. But when I realized that these guys are just crooks ripping people off, and, you know, they promote steroid users, I just thought, there's no point. What's the point of fighting at the top of the world when all this is just ripping you off, taking advantage of you, and all they do is just give you guys that cheat and then don't punish them? And then, you know, what makes it even worse is that they force you to fight steroid cheaters. If you don't fight the steroid cheaters, they say they're going to fire you. Ha! How are you going to take away my living, man? Why don't you punish those guys that cheated?
Gotcha. Absolutely.
All I'm doing now is just spreading out the word that it makes me laugh when I see people just side with them and they go, well, he's fucked. And it's good to see these champions are speaking up because that they want more money, because that's bullshit. 20% is rubbish.
I got you. So obviously we might let you go and let you get back to whatever you're doing and, you know, get you back in training. I can't wait to see you fight in October. Again, you're one of my heroes, one of the guys I grew up watching. So is there any last words, any times, any venue we can watch you? You know, is the fight sign, or where can we stream you and where can we watch your next fight?
Should be, there'll be some media up for the event, so we'll see how that goes. Looking forward to it, you know. So thanks for having the show. You know, keep spreading the word about these fucking crooks.
I got you. All right, thank you. Really do appreciate you coming on, and it's an honor talking to you. And in all your future endeavors, I can't wait to see what you do next, and can't wait for you to ride out in the sunset and enjoy the career that you left behind. You're a legend in my eyes, and you'll always be a legend to everybody that's watching. Thank you so much, Mark.
Sorry you couldn't hear me.
I hope this lawsuit changes the way people see the how they do things and how this UFC company works. So, and the only way they're going to win is if they pay these fuckers off. So, you know, hopefully there's some justice in this fucking world. But thanks for having the show, guys. Appreciate it.
You're the man, Mark Hunt. Thank you so much. So that's Mark Hunt.
Wow.
He's obviously very, very fucking upset at the UFC right now. So
all I kept thinking the whole time, because I couldn't talk, so I just had the image of him butt bombing, butt splashing that Japanese fighter in Pride and over in my head.
So interesting story about that. And I watched that when I was a kid. I think it was like 2003.
Early Pride.
Yeah, yeah. And they usually had their end of year show. And I have to tune in. I have to order it and watch it at like 3 a.m. because it aired in Japan. So I had to get the live feed up. And my dad, God rest his soul, always ordered it. Mark Hunt, which Japan's always been fucking crazy, but Danilo Silva, who's their middleweight champion, had to fight Mark Hunt, who's their heavyweight champion. Face Mark Hunt against Vanderlei Silva, thinking Vanderlei Silva was just gonna fucking roll through him like fucking butter. Mark Hunt, Dolly Wop that ass. Dolly Wop. Vanderlei Silva shot for a takedown. He knew what was fucking up in that fight. He knew he didn't have shit from Mark Hunt. And Mark Hunt fucking like really glide through him like fucking butter. I mean, people say it was a controversial decision, but Mark Hunt definitely won that fight by decision and gave Vanderlei Silva his first defeat in Japan, in Pride, and made Vanderlei Silva seem human. And a lot of people said that was the start of the downturn of Vanderlei Silva, but like Mark Hunt was the guy to do it. He was the dice man when it came to Vanderlei Silva's career. So like Mark Hunt is always a fucking legend in my eyes, you know?
That was the coming out party for Mark Hunt for me as well.
Oh yeah. Because
that's also the card that we realized this guy can take a hit. Holy shit. This guy can get it as good as he can take it. That Mark Hunt is legendary.
Because Mark Hunt is the most unassuming guy on the planet. You have Vanderlei Silva, who's fucking jacked to the gills. Mark Hunt, he had that big old belly, and he had that big fucking, like, you know, presence about him. You saw Vanderlei Silva fucking ripping through him. But obviously, they put Vanderlei Silva against the wrong guy. Because I remember the guy who fought against Ernesto Hoos, Jerome Rabanner, I think like 4 or 5 times. Ray Sefo, a bunch of times. Fought against the who's who, Cyril Abee in fucking K1. Mark Hunt's a fucking legend. And I remember watching all of his fights. And on that day, they put Vanderlei Silva against the wrong fucking guy because Mark Hunt absolutely waxed that ass. It was a great fight.
And Vanderlei Silva was the most intimidating fighter in the sport at the time. That was what I was just imitating. Remember when he was just standing there doing...
Oh, yeah, dude.
And then you got Mark Hunt across just like...
Yeah.
But and can we
Vanderlei Silva, I did not like Vanderlei Silva because my biggest hero growing up was Kazushi Sakuraba, and he beat Sakuraba 3 times. Once in 2001, again in 2000. No. It was once in 2000, once in 2001. Yeah, Championship Chaos in 2001, and then another time at the Pride Grand Prix 2003. So I did not like Vanderlei Silva. So seeing Mark Hunt give him his very first L in Pride and make him seem human, because he kept feeding him like little Japanese guys, and Vanderlei Silva just fucking tore right through him. And then finally Mark Hunt stood up to the challenge, accepted that Pepsi challenge, and fucking, you know, won a decision. And I love Vanderlei Silva now. However, I did not like him back then because he beat my hero Kazushi Sakuraba 3 times. So like Mark Hunt is a hero in my book.
Watch, bro. Those were hard Sakuraba Vanderlei Silva fights were hard to watch. And you notice the progression of Sakuraba wearing more and more, like, bandages. The guy had, like, all the coverings. Bro, pads on everything. And he just, like, progressively got more padding as the trilogy went on.
Yeah, because Sakuraba, okay, now I'm going to fucking vent. I'm sorry because I had a little bit too many Budweisers. And now I'm going to fucking vent. Because
hey, I'm tattooed, bro, on coffee right now, so you're not alone.
Sakuraba, they put in the wrong weight class. And it kept feeding him fucking monsters.
That's because he was
He should have been a welterweight his entire fucking career. He's your biggest star in Japan. Why the fuck would you feed him Vanderlei Silva? Holy shit, this makes me drink.
And Sakuraba's best performances were at welterweight. Look what he did to Hoist Gracie. How long was that fight? Like 100,000, 257 rounds?
It was 70 minutes. It was the longest MMA fight in fucking modern day MMA history.
That's what I just
said. How to fight Igor Volchanchyn after. Oh my God, I'm gonna fucking drink. Don't laugh at me, Justin. Don't laugh at me. It was the biggest travesty ever. Oh my God. What the fuck?
That was rough, man, but he signed up for all of that. But that guy, listen, if there was a Mount Rushmore for MMA, Sakuraba's face would have to be on it.
All right, now I feel a little bit better. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm fucking believable. I can't believe Mark Hunt, he's really upset with the UFC. Like, and you can just tell. And I talked to John Fitch. John Fitch, who was on my podcast, and shout out to John Fitch. This is a serious issue when it comes to fighters. I really think, and just talking to previous fighters, and you know, I'm an advocate for fighters. You know, I fought, and I want fighters being taken care of. I love the UFC. I love Dana White. I met Dana White once. He's a great guy. I want the fighters being taken care of. Mark Hunt is not on the crazy side of history. Mark Hunt is just standing up for fighters and saying that, hey, if we're going to be building the sport on our backs, we should be compensated for it. We should be taken care of. There should be a good ranking system. We should be paid accordingly. We should be paid like boxers. Like, Mark Hunt is not exactly, and you might have saw the entire interview and said, oh my God, Mark Hunt's going off the rails. But obviously this is a passionate topic to him because this is just basic fucking fundamentals that happen in NFL, NBA. NFL, they pay fucking O.J. Simpson still. Seriously. They pay fucking murderers and steroid users and still, like, they still pay them their pension. MMA should take care of the people that built the fucking sport. They should take care of the fighters. Without the fighters, there wouldn't be a fucking sport. Period. Mark Hunt is not being crazy. He's just passionate about the fact that the UFC is completely behind the eight ball when it comes to taking care of the fighters.
Listen, he's a victim in this situation, okay? And I'm a huge Mark Hunt fan. And that's the last thing I'll say about that because I've never been more conflicted on what to say about a topic in my life.
How come? Let him know. Say it.
I hate you, David.
No, come on, say it. How do you feel?
Because it's not about anything that he said, man. It has nothing to do with anything that Mark Hunt said.
About the topic, though, Justin, what do you feel about the topic?
The topic is fighters. This is the order. Fighters, fans. That's the order of importance. Fighters are number one in my head.
Right.
So that should tell you how I feel about the topic.
Okay.
Fighters are number one, then the fans, then everybody else.
Yeah.
But he's in a conflict with people that I know, you know.
Yeah, and I love the UFC, and I've ordered multiple UFCs. I've given the UFC a lot of my money. You know, I love the UFC. The UFC, I've never been more passionate about a company like I'm passionate about the UFC.
None of us would be doing what we're doing if it wasn't for UFC.
Exactly. We're all on the same page when it comes to that. But fighters gain their due. If you're going to wear Reebok, you got to protect the backs that are breaking them. You got to protect the backs that are wearing those Reebok gears. You got to protect the fighters, and you got to pay them accordingly, especially if they're going out and making you X amount of dollars. It's not obscene. This shouldn't be a controversial topic.
It's not at all. Fighters are grossly, disrespectfully underpaid, brother. Thank and you. When you compare it to what other athletes get paid, it's an even deeper disrespect. MMA fighters are the number one athletes in the world, period, bar none. Come fight me if you have an issue with that. It'll be a quick fight. But, and they get paid shit. Dude, it's horrible, bro. Listen, dude, I know some of the most badass fighters, and these guys have second jobs. These guys drive cars that are, you know, need to go to the shop once a week. These guys are struggling and grinding, and they are some of the most talented, humble, blessed athletes in the world.
Right.
But they're struggling because then they'll go watch Floyd Mayweather dance and get paid what they may never, probably never make in their life.
Well, that's a different thing because you know, Floyd, and just to defend.
I'm talking about the balance of the money, brother. I'm talking about the balance of the money.
You also have to look at how old the sport is.
Sure, sure. But just talking the percentage of the money pie.
Well, I understand.
Wait a second, because the sport is a lot older than what you think. I'm talking about
the organizations themselves.
Well, the organization UFC has been around since 1993, 94, right?
I think it's 93, bro.
Yeah, yeah, but it was bought by Zuffa in 2000. Yeah, 2000. Their first major pay-per-view when they were back on pay-per-view was UFC 33 with Victory in Vegas in 2001. And, of course,
how long ago has, like, the boxing been around, like, the organization?
What?
Well, boxing's been around.
The organization.
Boxing is the oldest sports in the world. Wrestling and boxing is the oldest sports in the world. Go back 15,000 years. There were literally writings on the wall of Egyptian writings.
Matt, I know what you're saying. I don't know the answer for, like, when the WBA or the WBC or the IBO or the IBF came into. We can look that up. But I'll tell you about bare knuckle. That bare knuckle belt that they give out was the one that Sullivan won in, like, 1880-something. Like, bare knuckle actual organizations who have been around since the 1800s, brother. And I'm sure it's even older in Europe. I bet you could find bare knuckle organizations from older than that one, maybe. So
well, actually,
original sweet science.
Before the 19th century, and also in the beginning of the 19th century, it was like in France where they incorporate a lot of bare knuckle boxing. So, yeah. Bare knuckle boxing has been around for quite some time. It's safe now, even safer now. Correct. So bare knuckle boxing has been around for quite some time. But and I'll address this in my show. But MMA has been around. You know, you can see droppings of MMA starting to form all the way back to 200 BC in fucking China, which means that coronavirus and MMA are the first things that are manufactured in China that have lasted longer than 20 minutes, which is amazing. So, whew, like, MMA has been around for a lot longer than you think. Okay, so, you know, but back on topic, MMA, even in the NFL, when there wasn't a lot of money to go around, I completely understand. But even in the NFL, back in the day, like, football players were still getting compensated accordingly for their hard work with a lot less rules, with a lot less equipment. And now that there's so many more, like, there's so much more safety provisions, there's so many more avenues to get revenue, there's so many more avenues to get money. Doesn't matter. I don't give a fuck if the sport's only 18 years old. We're in a generation where there's a lot more avenues to make money for fighters. I just, in my personal opinion, I just think that, you know, we have to put players accordingly. And we have to do a better job of doing that. As a sport, as a whole. I know it might be a controversial topic, but I believe in taking care of the fighters.
The champ is here!
The champ is here!
The champ is here! What up, Gabe?
Chairman. What's up? I'm sorry. I had this. I put your hands off that, please.
Somebody just commented that if I fight, put my chin down. First of all, I'm not fighting anytime. Secondly, they tell me, chin up, kid, chin up, little guy. So I'm taking that direction right now.
You don't have to fight, brother. We'll fight for you, man. You got an army, man. You got an army.
Squad. I'll film you getting your ass whooped by my friends.
And you know what? Like, I love mixed martial arts. Titan FC takes a great – they do a great job by their fighters, hyping up and promoting each fighter, giving them the pathway to success. Carrying this on as a career, that's – you know, Titan FC is one of the best to do it and take care of their fighters, take care of the sport, honoring the sport and doing right by the sport. UFC also does a great job in marketing fighters, giving them the platform to practice their craft. It's nothing to do with management or the UFC or Titan or any of MMA as a whole. Just fighters being treated like the warriors and fucking great people that they are.
Yeah. You know, It's all about that. And that's what I mean. That's what I should have been more specific about my Mayweather analogy.
Right.
I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I'm not trying to take anything away from boxing. But I see these guys. I work with these guys that are UFC caliber. Some of them are better than UFC guys. Some of them I've filmed dropping UFC guys in sparring. Okay. These guys are struggling, really struggling financially, some of them, to get there. They're holding on to get the chance to get there. And I see them cutting the weight and making the sacrifices and all those things that you've been through yourself. And then to watch a boring fight, let's say, and get paid ridiculous amounts of money, where if you took half of that money and invested it into a company like Titan, the ripple effect that that money could help would be phenomenal, brother. You know, I mean, and alluding to what you said, whenever I show Lex, like I'll say, hey, Lex, look, we got another guy to UFC. I mean, he already knows before I tell him, but I'll go, look, we got another one. He'll go, that's what we do, bud. That's what we do. That's what he's all about. That's what Titan's all about, is propelling that talent to the next level.
Right. And just before we wrap up the show, I just want to correct you, because I did not follow on the journey. I fought, but I did not follow on the journey of these Titan FC warriors and UFC fighters and everything like that. Because early on, I saw that there was going to be no money. These guys are warriors because they know the path they've chosen and they follow it. I trained part-time, and I still train part-time, because I realized the money is protecting my brain and applying it in different directions, especially in the corporate world, because I know, you know, I'm not UFC caliber, and I accepted that at a very young age. And I did not take that chance. I did not have the balls of these guys to take that chance. So I decided to go in the corporate world and take this as a hobby. These guys are turning this into a lifestyle where they're training full time. They're putting in the work full time. They are risking being broke. They're risking having no money in their pocket. They're doing shit that I didn't have the balls to do, and turning this into a full time career where I only do this part time. I'm taking a fight, and I'm only doing this part time. So these guys actually made this into a career. So obviously, you know, these guys need to be compensated for their efforts. These guys, not slate against any promotion, but you need to protect and you need to pay accordingly the fighters who are making your promotion money.
Yes.
Bottom line, no matter what, you feel appreciated.
Yes, so, brother. Without the fighters, there is nothing. Without the fighters, there is nothing.
Exactly.
But what I'm saying is, if you look at those UFC payouts after a card, look at the guys in the early prelims. Those numbers are hard to look at, bro. When you take into consideration how much is taken out of that for their training camp, for their preparation, bro, it's crazy, man. Some of them.
Hey, Gabe, so I need some insight, and I pick your brain about everything, and obviously I got to nerd out to you and ask your opinion. So Mark Hunt obviously has a lot of grievances, especially towards the UFC, and he said, you know, there's going to be a big thing that's going to happen in September, according to his lawsuit. And we talked about this last week. And I never asked you personally. I never messaged you about this. But in your perspective, like, and we're talking about this, are UFC fighters completely grossly underpaid? And do they need to be compensated a little bit better? And how do you do that? And especially defending UFC, how do you do that during a times of a pandemic where there's not a lot of money to go around? Well, obviously there might be a lot of money to go around, but you know the inside more than I do. So what's your perspective?
Well, I mean, they have money. It's not like the coffers are bare and there's no money to be had. The deals that they have for ESPN as generating more than enough revenue to be able to bring the fighters pay up. I don't know the deal for Reebok. I'd be interested to see the numbers of how much money that revenue goes to the UFC versus to the fighters. Last I heard, they were projected to be a $6-7 billion company. And I understand that the company has to run the way a company does and has to be efficient, but the way you run your company is the ones that are doing the most work should be getting compensated for the work they do. Right. And I think that I would like to see the books as a whole, and everything should be up front. I think it's a lot of times we go by what we're told instead of the actual numbers. Again, I was blown away when the lawsuit came out, 12 to 15% of revenue was going to the fighters. 12 to 15%. That is nothing. Nothing. Imagine put that into perspective in a different different format. Say you have a construction company, right? And you're paying the employees, the ones that are doing all of the work, 12% of the profit, right? And you, as the owner of the construction company, how can you justify that the people that are putting all the hard work and effort into making the construction as good as it can be are getting 12% of the profits that your company is making? How can you justify that?
Right. So
that's a great analogy, Gabe. That was a good analogy, bro. That for all the 5-year-olds like myself out there, that spelled it out.
So not to be an advocate for the UFC, Gabe, and I want you to correct me, but like, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, I'm working for the UFC, and I say, well, Gabe, the reason why we're paying you 12% of whatever we're making is because it costs this much for production. It costs this much for setting up the ring and for setting up the arenas, for renting out the arenas, for, you know, putting you on television, for giving you all these avenues to be seen. And, like, it costs all this shit. So, like, how would you debate that where, like, UFC will say, well, that's the reason why we're paying only 12%?
Of course. So how much do you think it costs the UFC to go to the MGM or the Mandalay Bay?
I have no idea.
Oh, shit. Get him, Gabe. Get him, Gabe.
Zero. You know why? They why? Actually pay, the casinos pay why? To bring the UFC to their casino. They pay to do that. Why? Because that event fills the casino with people that are patronizing it to gamble, to drink, to eat, to spend money. They pay to have the UFC there to hold events.
Hey, plus they get that
production. Nice, you're telling nice me they don't have production down by now?
They get that nice drone shot of the building, publicity on the pay-per-view.
Wow.
But then on top of that, so production. You get to a point with production where production is just a regular thing. You know how to put it down. And the thing is, you're going to tell me that ESPN is going to have the UFC run production? That's not how it works. All the Spike TV stuff, they did the production. Massive production companies handle that stuff. Now, still 12% is going to the workers. 12% is going to the people that are putting the content down. I am not by any means saying that production is not an issue and those things need to be worked out. But because casinos pay the UFC, as a matter of fact, they all bid to get UFC to come there. So that is actually another revenue generator right there.
Can I just throw this in and then you guys can continue? Production is always a major issue. Commence.
How come?
Commence. I don't doubt it, but once you've got production down, it runs like a fluid motion. Everything is done.
Bam, that's bam, true. Bam. That's true.
Hey, Matt, do we have some more time so we can talk about this, or?
I need a second. I'll be right back.
Okay, perfect.
David, what I meant by there's always a problem in production, like, okay, so Lex always says there's this Dana White quote that he always quotes Dana saying, that Dana wakes up every day in the fight game and says, something's going to go wrong today. Every day something goes wrong.
Right.
I'm trying to get that mentality in my head too, so that then when the obstacles come, it's just part of the, you know, it's, oh, this is today's fire I got to put out. Right. But in production, there's always unseen things that come up that you have to iron out.
But that's business 101, Justin. I mean, yeah. In my company, it's the same thing. Like some recruits drop out. Some people like accept other job offers, or they want more money. Like it's the same thing in business. It's business 101. Things go wrong. But like, you know, I'm on the fence too, because I love the UFC, and it pops my little bubble when I hear Mark Hunt so upset because he's a legend. He's built the sport. He's helped build the sport. Gabe, another legend who helped build the sport. So obviously it's conflicted. It pops my little bubble. It's like, I love chocolate ice cream, but you also tell me that the chocolate ice cream could also get me sick, and it's also poisonous, and also hurts other people. It makes things different, but the same token.
It's a conflicting feeling, dude. I can completely relate. And I think your chocolate ice cream slowly killing me is the perfect analogy.
Exactly. So, like, and that's where I'm at with the UFC. And I think Dana White is an incredible president. I think he grinded to get, and I know personally, because I've seen the purchase from Zuffa. I've seen him go through his struggles of no one buying the pay-per-views except maybe me and two other people. I've seen where the only media outlets that would support us were SureDog and MMAUnderground.com, where Tap Out didn't have enough money to even buy tapout.com. It was inyourface.com. There was no money in the sport whatsoever, and Dana White turned shit into chicken salad. Yeah. So I absolutely know the hard work Dana White put in. And, you know, it's conflicting for me, because I also know the people like Gabe, the people like Mark Hunt, that should be compensated and should be taken care of, because they fucking built this shit.
Yes, they built this shit for sure, bro. But
Gabe,
does anybody know a pioneer that didn't piss people off? That's a legit question.
Apparently Randy Couture pissed people off, and he's the most respectful guy on the planet.
Dana tips more than some fighters make in a fight. I've been to dinners where he's tipped more than people making a fight. He gambles. Wow. He gambles and loses big money. Doesn't matter at all. So, like, wow. Talking about, like, oh, you know, Dana's done this, then I commend Dana for putting all the time and effort he did, but he has surpassed whatever payout he's deserved for what he's put into the sport. And the reality is Dana was not the money guy anyways. It was the Fertitta brothers that Dana was their buddy that got him involved in the sport. It was the Fertitta brothers that actually made the attempt and put the money forward to keep the UFC alive and make it what it was.
Right.
I think
they got a $4.3 billion.
The real problem is that when Dana White went fully bald, everything shifted. If you look at the early UFC, he had a little bit of hair like David.
A little bit.
I think it's a Samson effect.
Samson effect.
But I have no idea what to say. I just make stupid jokes, bro.
But and before you came back on, Gabe, I remember when, like, yo, UFC didn't have a pot to piss in. Like, Tap Out couldn't afford tapout.com. It was inyourface.com. Nobody had money. There was no money in MMA. We didn't have Ariel Helwani. We had Rafael Torre. Like, we didn't have fucking media whatsoever. We had nobody. So, like, I saw the work that Dana White put in, and I like, to his defense, absolutely know what he's done for the sport. But, like, my argument too is, now it's time to compensate. Now it's time for everybody to make money, like you, Mark Hunt, for everybody that built the sport on their backs. Now it's time for everybody to make money, you know?
It's there to be made. It's there to be made. My point is, name somebody. I'm playing devil's advocate here. Name somebody that has propelled the overall sport of MMA as far as all of us having the ability to make money in all the different niches now, other than Dana. But I honestly believe that if there was no Dana White, it would not be on the level it is now and all these small little sub niches. It wouldn't be, bro. We wouldn't be having a show right now. I don't know, bro.
What do you think, Gabe?
I disagree. I think you're putting too much in Dana's hands. I mean, the idea, listen, there was a grassroots of the sport that was there no matter what. Okay. Now the Fertitta brothers, if we're gonna go over, we're gonna talk about the UFC, and we're gonna use Dana White as the prodigal member of MMA that kept it alive. The Fertitta brothers were the ones that financed it. They were the ones that believed in it. They were the ones that put the money in to ensure that their business venture got off of the starting block. Dana is just the face. Like, and listen, he's done an exceptional job. And there's a reason why when the UFC was bought out, they kept Dana on with the contract as the president. Dana doesn't have any power anymore. Everyone talks about Dana like he's the guy. The new company, they run the show. Dana's just the figurehead at this point. Like, I don't disagree that he has a part of it, but like acting like all this shit is here is disingenuous and giving the man way too much credit that he doesn't deserve.
But his business model was the most successful too. So like, to play both advocate where I'm defending the fighters because all I care about are the fucking fighters, like you, Gabe, obviously. But his business model was the one that actually worked, considering you had Pride, which was so balls deep in the Yakuza clan. The original president of Dream Stage Entertainment hung himself from his fucking hotel closet. And then you had to get Sakuraba, I don't even know his name. But he took over and completely drilled that company into the fucking ground where they lost their TV deal. He was the guy that had the business model that was the most successful. And for Tito's brothers, too, like, their father completely forbidden them. They were like, oh, Fertitta's do not – my Fertitta boys, my Fertitta sons, do not invest in the UFC. This is a bad idea. And Dana White, all three of them understood because they trained with John Lewis and Tito Ortiz, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and they finally discovered the love of the sport. And, you know, all the pieces had to be put in place together perfectly. And Dana White's and Fertitta brothers, their business model was the most successful. So obviously they should reap all the benefits. But this is where I get to my point. Where Dana White and Fertitta brothers, obviously they deserve to reap all the benefits. However, the fighters like you who grinded your entire fucking career and broke bones to build the sport, and you guys fought where there was no audience whatsoever. The guys like you who broke their bones should be compensated accordingly. Like, and that's my biggest argument. That's my biggest where I feel that, you know, Dana White obviously should be compensated, but I think guys like you, there shouldn't be a fucking lawsuit altogether. I think that's what it comes down to. There should be a fucking lawsuit.
They need to be taken care of. Absolutely, bro. No arguing that.
Yeah, it's just my ball.
The Fertittas have been compensated over and over and over again. They dumped about $30 million into the company to get $4.3 billion out. That's pretty good compensation, if I'm not mistaken.
That's a turnover, bro.
I mean, I don't like to have a master's in business to know that you take $30 million and you build it to $4.3 billion. That's a really solid business tax move.
Oh, yeah.
Dana has been compensated over and over again, too. Now, this is interesting enough. I don't know which Fertitta brother it was. I believe it was Frank. He was on the Nevada Athletic Commission board.
Yeah.
And when the UFC originally wanted to open up in Nevada, he said no. And then as soon as they bought it, he pulled out of the commission, and then all of a sudden it was legal in Nevada.
Let me ask you a question, Gabe. Does that have anything to do with the fact that when the Fertittas took over, they put the weight classes in there? They changed some, they put some more rules so that it would be more accepted. Really? More
accepted? Nope. Really? And so, look, okay, look, this is MMA history. And again, Matt, you're a big MMA history fan, so look this up. It was originally legal in New Jersey. That was the very first place in the U.S. that it was legal, okay? They tried to get it also to be legal in Nevada, so you would have the two gaming capitals of the world. You have the East Coast and the West Coast, right? New Jersey said, yeah, we're good. Well, let's do it. Nevada said no. And this is when, I don't know which Fertitta brother, but one of the Fertitta brothers was on the athletic commission at that point when Art Davey still owned the UFC.
Wow.
Now, my personal feeling is making it legal in Nevada was the starting point of opening everything up.
Right. And just to interject, it was actually Frank Fertitta. He was on the Nevada State Athletic Commission. He was a part of the original group that actually legalized and got Mike Tyson back into the game after he bought Evander Holyfield's ear. So just to say. Also, they gave a provisionary license because one of the guys on the New Jersey State Athletic Commission was actually a part of mixed martial arts and was actually a mixed martial artist. So he actually saw the beauty of the sport. He was an African-American fellow. I forget his name. But and Trump Plaza was the one that, like, Atlantic City was the one that, like, hosted when UFC came back and when Zuffa bought it out. Continue. I'm so sorry for interrupting. I'm sorry.
But so that is a very distinct part of the growth of MMA.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are heading towards the ending mark of this very interesting episode where we talk about the politics of mixed martial arts, and we dug pretty deep, and obviously Mark Hunt brought us there, which, you know, I love talking about this stuff. I can talk about it all day, especially with Gabe, who's a fucking MMA pioneer, a WC champion, UFC veteran, one of the best in the biz, and one of the nicest guys ever, and a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt who's passing down his knowledge to everybody else. So, Gabe, any parting words to the gentleman himself?
Well, I came in late today. I apologize for jumping in late, but I was on daddy duties, which supersede everything else in my life. But back to it next week, and hopefully we can get the lag on my laptop seems a little off, so I think I need to work on the Wi-Fi in my house in my studio.
Awesome. And Justin, award-winning director, the GOAT himself when it is behind the cam. Justin, any last words from you, my friend?
I just want to say thank you, guys. My life is a dream right now, being on a show with you guys. Is surreal to me, and I'm just grateful, man. And oh, Titan FC 63, August 28th, 8 p.m., UFC Fight Pass. Tune in.
And Matt, the producer of one of the best MMA podcasts on the fucking planet Earth. Matt, any last words, please?
No, other than if you're at home watching something on TV and you get a chance, go to either Roku or Amazon Fire Stick or Apple TV. We now have our own app on there, so you can sit in the comfort of your own chair or bed and watch the streams from there. So be sure to go download the apps and give us a good review.
Awesome. And if, also have a lady show gig.
Also, if any other events or podcasts want to join us on the network, we're trying to get as much content on there as possible, so get a hold of me.
Awesome. And we also have a ladies show that's coming out September 2nd. It debuts, right, Matt?
September 2nd, yes.
What is awesome.
It? 30. Woo! Wow, what a lineup. Holy shit.
Boom. Wow. Damn.
Yeah, I think it'll be good.
Christina is a fucking savage. I can't wait to hear her talk. She has a great career. She's had a pass.
I love her, bro. Hey, good move on that, Matt. Real good move on that. And,
I
want to throw out a challenge to that trio right there. I think we should do like a handicap six-man tag match. What's up? We have David Potter and Gabriel Rudiger on my team.
All right, so we're going to wrap up this show. We're going to wrap it up like a Christmas present from Gabe, WC champion, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, former UFC veteran, and the man himself, and Justin, camera guy for Titan FC, award-winning director, Matt, the producer that makes this all happen, and me, who gives a shit about me. We are the Fight Mixer. Tune in every Thursday. We love to hear from you. We love to see you guys. Thank you so much for coming on. And we are signing off. Peace.
Hi, I'm Matt Seibel, producer of the Fight Mixer show. We have a good lineup of guests coming up next week. Take a look for yourself.